This podcast is sponsored by Debt Cleanse. Don't file bankruptcy. Try Debt Cleanse first.
Insights, strategies, and conversations you won't hear anywhere else. Always accurate and occasionally entertaining, here's your host, Martin Andelman from MandelmanMatters.com.
Hi, this is Martin Andelman from Mandelman Matters, and on today's show, we're talking about tax advantages and tax planning that have to do with mortgages, and not just any mortgages. We're talking about the HECM, H-E-C-M. It stands for Home Equity Conversion Mortgage, and it is the acronym that people use to describe the government-insured reverse mortgage program. It's a program that is not widely understood very well. A lot of people know some things about it, but they certainly don't know the things you're going to hear today. So stay tuned. We have a real expert on the HECM and how it can help you with retirement tax planning. Hello, this is Martin Andelman from Andelman Matters, and this is a Andelman Matters podcast. Today, it might sound boring on the surface, but I promise it's not. We have Jim Veal with us today. Jim Veal has been, well, a tax planner, a tax accountant, a CPA, a chief financial officer, a senior vice president of finance at all different industries, but most notably also at Security One Lending, which was one of the largest reverse mortgage lenders in the country. And today I've asked Jim to be on the show to talk about taxes and mortgages and taxes with an emphasis on the HECM, H-E-C-M, the Home Equity Conversion Mortgage. Jim, are you with me?
I'm with you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know when people hear taxes and they hear mortgages, it's like, oh my God, is this going to be boring? But it's not, right? This is anything but boring. And I wanted to ask you to come on today because there are so many questions that people have about with a reverse mortgage. How does the mortgage interest work? When can you take the deduction? Who can take the deduction? The one thing I wanted to start off with is the easy one. If you look up irs.gov, there's a question in the FAQ. It says, are the proceeds I receive from a reverse mortgage taxable to me? And the answer is very clearly, no, they're not. Reverse mortgage payments are not taxable. It says, according to the IRS, that reverse mortgage payments are considered loan proceeds and not income. So that makes that money that's available to somebody who has a HECM tax-free, which is better than taxable, right? Every single time. Because if you were to take money out of your 401k or your IRA, that would become taxable as ordinary income. So this is not taxable. Now that's the basic answer here. But what are the other, what about mortgage interest?
That's an interesting topic because really, just like any other mortgage, interest is deductible in 2021 if it is acquisition indebtedness. That means the proceeds had to have been used to acquire, substantially improve, or construct the home. And the loan must be, the home must be the collateral for the loan.
So you're saying the money has to be used to either purchase the home, to improve the home, to construct the home. Okay. So if the money was used for any of those three purposes, the interest is still deductible.
That's correct.
Okay.
Now, one thing a lot of people do not understand is if they refinance a current mortgage with a reverse mortgage, the acquisition indebtedness that was in the first mortgage, the mortgage they currently have, that acquisition interest and indebtedness will transfer into the reverse mortgage. Their debt, $300,000, the $200,000 of it was acquisition indebtedness. When they took out the reverse mortgage, paid off that entire existing mortgage, and what would happen would be $200,000 of the current balance due to the lender would be considered acquisition indebtedness, and the interest of that can be deducted in the year that it is paid.
And if you're not making payments, if it's a reverse mortgage and you've chosen not to make any payments this year, what happens?
What happens is that interest simply builds. And until the time that you actually pay it off, that interest is available for you to deduct at anytime. Let's take, for example, somebody who decides that their interest is not going to be tax effective because of the standard deduction. And what I mean by that, their total itemized deductions are going to be less than the amount that the government gives you just for being alive. The government gives you $27,000, it'll be in 2021. And what happens here is, if your itemized deductions are less than that, what you're going to deduct is the standard deduction, which means that all those itemized deductions that you paid, thinking they were going to help your tax situation, they're not. So what a person can do to get around that is, we call it bunching. And what you want to try and do is take as much income as you can in the year that you're going to deduct the interest. So let's say that it's now 2021, you just got your loan. In 2024, yeah, maybe there's $30,000 worth of interest built up on your loan. And so you decide, that's when I'm going to pay it because I've got this big amount of income coming in to 2024. And so you pay it. And along with that, you bunch all your charitable donations that you're going to be doing for the next 2 or 3 years. And you put them into that year as well, so you can get the maximum itemized deductions. And let's say that totals $60,000, including your state and local income taxes. So that's bigger than the standard deduction. And what that means is by then we'll probably be up to a $30,000 standard deduction. But $30,000 of that excess, you'll be tax benefited for. If you've done it the other way and just tried to deduct, try and make your payments every year, the problem is you would get the benefit of the standard deduction. But if you do it the way we're talking about, which is bunching, you would get the benefits of the standard deduction in the years that you did not bunch.
I love this. I didn't really realize this. This is interesting. Let me tell everybody who's listening why this is so interesting. So if you had a traditional mortgage, a forward, regular old mortgage, where you're making principal and interest payments every month, right? Then at the end of the year, if you don't have enough interest, mortgage interest to deduct that would be more than the standard deduction, then you just get the standard deduction and move on. There's nothing else to do. But if you had a HECM mortgage, you could, you know, not make any payments for 3 or 4 years and let that amount increase until maybe it's $50,000. It's worth taking. And then you pick a year where maybe you owe some capital gains or something like that, or you had a lot of income for another reason. And that's when you'd get the you'd pay it and get the deduction for all of those years.
What a lot of us in the industry talk about is it's a great offset to an IRA to Roth IRA rollover. So that picks up a lot of taxable income in the year that rollover is done. And you can control how much is rolled over, but all that becomes taxable. Now you've got this huge interest deduction plus all your other charitable deductions that you correctly plan to deduct in that year. Now it offsets a lot of that tax, or maybe it offsets all of it.
Wow.
So this is a really big tax planning technique. And one thing people don't understand is the HECM is a very effective tax planning tool that can really save you money, far more than your forward mortgage can.
Yeah, it's become obvious to me. So in other words, what you're saying here is that you could, in theory, you could bundle it or bunch it for 10 years. It's up to you. Now, when we talk about this IRA rollover, you're saying, so at a certain point, someone has an IRA, and maybe there's $100,000 in it, and you're saying at a certain point, they might want to convert that to a Roth IRA?
That's correct.
And the reason to do that is so that when they take the money out, it's no longer taxable as ordinary income.
That's right. And generally, most taxpayers find the earlier you can convert it to an IRA in your retirement,
to a Roth IRA.
Yeah, to a Roth IRA, the better off you're going to be. So let's say you have a 401k.
Yeah.
You can always roll that over to an IRA or to a Roth IRA. So what that means is that now all the earnings, it's not just what you rolled over that's not subject to tax. The big thing is, after you roll it over, all earnings subsequent to that are not subject to tax. There is a five-year rule which says the Roth IRA has to be in existence for 5 years. If it's not, then there's a certain income amount that you have to bring in and it gets taxed. But the idea is, if you're committed to that Roth IRA, to just putting it in, and now all of a sudden you have tax-free amounts you can pull out of it, this is a very good tool to do that with.
Right. So that, so people can take their 401k or their IRA at a certain point and say, I'm going to go ahead and convert it to a Roth and let it keep growing, because once I convert it to a Roth and it keeps growing, I'm not going to have to pay taxes on the withdrawals.
Exactly.
But you do have to pay the tax now that you owe to do that rollover, right?
That's right. And the RMD is no factor in this case. So basically, you're not adding taxable income if you pull out monies out of a Roth IRA, and the RMD rules are not there.
I see.
The idea is you can pull it out tax-free. It doesn't even increase the taxable portion of your Social Security. How's that?
Yeah. And see, and while you're doing that, the whole point here is that if you had a HECM and you had it, say, 5 years and you never made a payment, you've got all this mortgage interest that has accumulated that you've bunched or bundled. And so in the year you go to convert it and roll over that 401k or that IRA into a Roth IRA, that would be the year where you'd add up all of that mortgage interest that you haven't paid in the last 5 years and take the deduction.
That's right. Now I'm going to throw another little wrinkle in it. If you have an adjustable rate HECM,
yeah,
fixed rate HECMs are not, they're sophisticated enough to be able to do what we just described, but they're not sophisticated enough to do what we're just about ready to describe.
All right, go.
The HECM is a wonderful cash flow tool, because what you can do is, if you pull money out and you hold it in your bank account for, say, 30 days or so, whatever your tax advisor tells you, that money will be considered by the IRS at risk, as being at risk. Then you can use that cash to pay the interest. And what happens is, you pull the money out, your loan increased. 30 days, 60 days later, you then use that same money to get that interest deduction. Your loan decreases by the amount that you paid to get that interest deduction. And guess what? Your line of credit went up as well.
And that's, I'm glad you brought this point up. When you have a HECM, assuming it's an adjustable rate HECM, you have a line of credit, right? And that line of credit, as I understand this, goes up every time. If any time you pay a dollar into your HECM, your line of credit goes up by a dollar.
Exactly.
So it's dollar for dollar. So if I have a HECM and I didn't make any payments all year, and at the end of the year I said, you know what, I'm going to send $10,000 in.
Right.
Then my loan would go down by $10,000, or roughly $10,000, whatever that number should be. And my line of credit will go up by $10,000.
That's right. And it's going to be exactly $10,000 in both cases.
So your loan's going to go down by $10,000. Your line of credit's going to go up by $10,000.
Now, one thing I have to warn people about is the application rules under HUD are a little bit odd. We have something in the industry that's called mortgage insurance premiums that are charged monthly on the loan. They're on an annual basis, they're only 0.5%, but still they build up over time.
Sure.
And what's required under the terms of the loan is that the cash they receive from the borrower must first go to reduce that MIP.
Yeah.
So if you have $20,000, it's going to go towards that. But this is the wonderful thing about MIP. If you have acquisition indebtedness, the MIP is generally going to be deductible, as well as the interest you pay.
Ah.
Okay? So maybe only 60% of the MIP is considered acquisition MIP, and that's fine.
Sure.
Because 60% of it will be subject to a deduction. Whatever you pay, remember, it's always based on what you pay. 60% of what you pay is going to be considered a valid deduction for income tax purposes.
So if you've paid $10,000 in mortgage insurance as part of the HECM, $6,000 of that could become deductible, just like your mortgage insurance.
That's right. And if you got a HECM for purchase, which means you bought your home using a HECM and you never took any more monies out for trips or anything like that, you just let it sit there, all of that money is acquisition indebtedness.
So this can really add up.
It can really add up. And on the other side, let's say that your existing mortgage was all the amount that you used to acquire your latest home. Again, that acquisition indebtedness is now travels through as $300,000, let's say. The MIP related to it is also 100% deductible.
Wow.
So tax deductions is a wonderful thing. You've got to get not only a good tax advisor,
yeah,
but someone who understands the mechanics of a HECM.
Yeah.
I can't stress that enough because most advisors advise against getting a reverse mortgage only because they don't understand them.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, in my world, if somebody comes to me, one of my clients came to me back when I was practicing and said, hey, what do you think of this? If I tell them, go ahead and go out and get it, I haven't spent hours studying it to understand what the ramifications are, I could get myself in a lot of trouble.
Sure.
So usual answer to something that I didn't know anything about was, I don't know. You yeah. really need to do your, you really need to do your research. And if you ask me on the street, would you do this? I would have to say no.
Yeah.
Just, but that was because I didn't know anything about the product.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It's just, if you go to your lawyer, and the lawyer doesn't know much about the HECM program, and you say, should I do one of these? I don't know. It just seems safer to say no. If you say yes and something goes wrong, then you're in trouble. But if you say no and the client never does it, then you really can't get in trouble.
Exactly. And even if they do it, guess what? If it's a success, all you do is turn around and say to them, I'm glad you did it. You did something very smart.
Yeah, of course. All right, now, so this is interesting. So it's conceivable that with a HECM mortgage, you could end up with $100,000 in deductible expenses between interest or mortgage insurance. When you converted your IRA, your 401k, over to a Roth, and you owed $100,000 in taxes, you could use this to offset that tax liability.
You could use it to offset the taxable income that was generated.
Yeah, when you
by the conversion.
When you rolled it over.
Exactly. So if that was $200,000, you got $100,000 to offset it. Well, sure, your taxable income increased by $100,000, but you saved $100,000 in taxable income as a result.
All right. Now that's exciting. That really is an interesting thing that I know is not talked about enough. What if you're not paying it? You're not paying the mortgage. You've decided not to make any payments, and then you and your spouse pass away, and you leave the home to your heirs.
Okay.
Now what happens to all that mortgage interest when the house is either sold or refinanced?
You want to make sure you leave it to the heir who's going to have the most taxable income, because that heir, when that loan's paid off, whether it's through foreclosure, whether it's through a direct cash payoff, whether it's through a deed in lieu of foreclosure.
Or just refinancing.
Yeah, just whatever you do. The answer is financing with a different company, may I add. But if you finance with a different lender, all that interest will be deductible by the heir exactly in the same manner as it would have been had the decedent lived and made the payment himself.
Hmm.
So what happens is the heir steps inside the shoes of the decedent. And so they're treated just like the decedent, except the interest that accrues after the death of the decedent, that short period, because it usually takes anywhere from 6 to 12 months to terminate a HECM. That situation says that interest for the 6 to 12 months is according to the way I used the property.
Wow.
Okay.
So if you had a reverse mortgage maybe for 15 years and you never made any payments, and maybe it's you got $200,000 in mortgage interest or something that's now part of this payoff, you would want to look at your, let's say you have two kids, you want to look at the kids and go, okay, wait, one of them is a higher earner and is paying a lot in taxes, and maybe the other one is not, you would want to work this out to leave that home to the higher earner so that they can take advantage of the tax benefit and figure out another way to make it equitable with the other sibling, right?
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah, that's why. If my daughter is an orthopedic surgeon and my son is volunteering for the Red Cross, I want to leave the home to the orthopedic surgeon because when that's refinanced or sold, she can probably use that deduction, a couple $100,000, whereas the person who's still volunteering, not making much money, wouldn't benefit from that. So there'd be another way to compensate the other sibling to make it equitable between the two, but you'd want to leave the house to the higher earner.
That's right. And then the higher earner, say that they decide, I want to protect myself as exposure to higher taxes in retirement, because some people find that actually happens to them. So they decide that now they're 50 and they've got the, now they're 59 and a half. They've got a taxable IRA and they want to roll it over. That's a great time to do it because, again, the earnings after the rollover are all tax-free.
Right. So if you roll over, let's say $500,000, and then you, let's just for fun, say that the next year you invested that and you, let's say you earned 10%. So you earned $50,000 in gains that year. If that were in a Roth IRA, that $50,000 would be tax-free.
It would never come back to you as taxable.
Yeah.
And it passes through to your heirs. Now there's a new wrinkle to that. It used to be that you could keep that running going on for at least the next heir, and they would not pay any taxes until a distribution had been made. Or if it's a Roth, they would pay no taxes. But the idea is the next child could get that IRA tax-free, that Roth IRA tax-free. But the basic problem is now there's a 10-year rule, and all the proceeds have to be taken out in 10 years.
Okay.
It's a new thing that was added in the Trump tax bill in 2017.
I don't know this for sure, but I'm guessing after hearing this that this is one of the reasons people don't convert to the Roth IRA. They don't know about this.
I'm sure you're absolutely right.
Let's be blunt about this. It's got to be 20 years ago when I first started hearing the Roth IRA pitch, the idea that you should take your $1 million in your 401k, pay taxes on it now, and put it in a Roth IRA. I don't know, Jim, my memory was almost no one did it.
That's right. That's right. It's becoming more popular now because everybody realizes Biden's going to raise taxes. And
yeah.
It's not Biden, it'll be a successor.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got too much debt right now. And so the only answer to that from an economic point of view is you got to somehow raise the taxes on the people in the country.
Yeah. So with that coming, you're saying it is becoming more popular. But it's a hard thing to do, right? I'm thinking about if I have $1 million in my 401k and somebody says, look, roll that over into a Roth. And as a result, I end up owing $200,000. In taxes, I'm gonna roll it over, but I used to have $1 million. Now I have 800,000.
That's right. What you usually try and do, if the situation is right, you go ahead and roll over the full $1 million, and then you pay the taxes out of other money you have. You might
okay.
have to sell some stock, might have to sell some stock, might have to do. But the basic problem with that now is, if the new law passes and the capital gains rate, the maximum goes up to 40%, that could be another problem that's going to face taxpayers. So they're going to have to do tax planning around higher capital gains. So right now, what a lot of people are looking at is, why don't I just buy the same stock right now, and then in a month or so, I sell that same stock that I'm holding and pay my capital gains tax at 20%, that not only helps me, but if the side of it that says there's no step up in basis, it will help my children. And I've gotten away with paying taxes on it at 20%.
Yeah. Okay. So, but it's hard to do. That's why people don't do it. Now, had somebody switched to the HECM and did this 5 years from now, that tax liability, instead of being $200,000, could be, I don't know, $50,000.
It all depends. All depends. In
yeah.
business, we talk about facts and circumstances. And the facts and circumstances change over time. So even you might be doing the best tax plan in the world you can today for 10 years from now. But when 10 years from now comes around, you find out, oh, we should have planned it a little bit differently. You just don't know what 10 years from now is going to look like. We do our best to try and plan for the future, but not all our planning is necessarily correct. It just, we're planning according to the way the cards read right now.
Sure. Listen, with what's gone on the last year, I don't even know if I know what's going to happen next week. I don't know. This podcast is sponsored by Debt Cleanse. If debt has become a problem, you need to check out Debt Cleanse. Don't file bankruptcy. Try Debt Cleanse first. It's only $29 a month. You get the first month free, and you can cancel anytime. What do you have to lose? Debt Cleanse can help you get out of debt. Creditors make mistakes all the time. Debt Cleanse helps you catch them. Debt Cleanse can do more for your financial situation than anything else. You've got to give it a try. You reach Debt Cleanse simply at 1-800-500-0908. That's 1-800-500-0908. And tell them you heard about them on Mandelman Matters. Let me ask you another question. This is about HECM to HECM refinancing. And so some people have a HECM reverse mortgage. Maybe the interest rate's 4.5% from a few years ago. And someone calls them today and says, look, I can refinance your HECM and get you down to 3%. So it sounds like a good idea. What happens there in terms of the deductibility of mortgage interest?
Okay. And again, you want to seek your tax advisor. I'm not your tax advisor, but I'm going to tell you what the way that I understand it rules actually work. And that is that if you refi with the same lender you have right now, the IRS doesn't consider that any cash has transferred from the existing lender to the existing lender. To them, it's just paper shuffling.
Yeah.
But if instead you go to a different lender and you refi with them, the IRS looks that there's an obligation there that's just been created between that new lender and you, and that money has now been directed to pay off the old loan, and they look at that as a true transfer of cash, and therefore the interest becomes deductible if you refi with a different lender, where it may not if you refi with the same lender.
Now, is that the originator or who owns the loan?
Who owns the loan? And again, we're looking at it from the side of the lender is usually the person that's, the company that's listed in the loan document. So you might have a loan with Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo is no longer in the industry, so you might go with somebody different, say Liberty or, I'm just
Longbridge, right.
So, I'm not trying to point you to any person or any group, but the idea is that's where you look to see who your lender was.
Gotcha. So if you have a loan, it's with Liberty, and you're going to do a HECM, you're going to refinance it into another HECM in order to get a lower interest rate or more favorable terms, you'd want to make sure that you're not refinancing it with Liberty again, because then the IRS won't view that interest as deductible anymore.
That's right. Now, for some people, it makes sense. In other words, this is not the right year to get that deduction. They'll work that out themselves later. So maybe they'll go back. The right thing for them to do is if they want to refi, they should talk to Liberty to see if they can get the same terms that they're being offered. AAG, which is the largest lender in our industry, if somebody called them from AAG and said, would you like to do this? We see that your loan right now is at 4, and we can bring it down to 3.25, whatever they say they can do. Just remember, along with it goes the deduction. And so you want to make sure with your tax advisor that he's on board and he's helping you plan to bring all the income and all the deductions you can in that year, if in fact you can use that deduction.
Right. And if you can't use it this year, if you couldn't use it this year, you could again bunch it or bundle it and wait till it's a bigger number and you need it.
You're 100% right.
Wow. Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of CPAs that know this. If you were going to a CPA today and you were just a homeowner, what kind of questions would you ask to make sure that CPA knows about the HECM program?
First thing I'd ask them is, can you tell me what a reverse mortgage is?
Yeah.
And if they go to some long explanation and they don't hit it on the head like Martin does, Martin starts off and he says, reverse mortgage is a mortgage just like every other mortgage you've ever had. In fact, it's just like the mortgage you have right now. Is that close to how you put it?
It's true, right? It is just a mortgage.
It is. Now, I add the word non-recourse in front of it. That means, and people might be very surprised when I say this, that means absolutely nothing in California, because basically all lenders, not what would go in for what's referred to as a trustee sale on the trustee, we're a trustee state, and by doing that, they relinquish any right they might have to deficiency judgment.
Right.
And so actually, by going to the trustee sale, which all lenders do, it's just too much work, too much hassle, too much money lost to go through the courts and get a judicial foreclosure. But if you use the trustee sale, you also have to relinquish the right to get any more money than the home. What they're after when they go through a trustee sale is just getting the home, because that's what it is that they have the right to. But if the loan was $400,000 and the house was only worth $350,000, the lender has to be satisfied with the home.
What about if the heirs want to refinance it and keep it?
The heirs can do that. The thing with the heirs, though, is they get an option that the borrower doesn't get. A borrower must pay the entire loan off to keep the home. But the heirs have the right to pay the lesser of the amount of the loan that's due, or 95% of the value at the time they pay it off. So for a heir, it's a much cheaper transaction if the home is underwater, which just simply means the debt owed on that mortgage is greater than the value of that home.
So let's give an example. So somebody passed away and owed $300,000 on their HECM. But something right. happened, real estate went down or whatever, and the home is only worth $200,000. And so the heir decides, I'd like to refinance that and keep it. So you're saying that heir can refinance that and buy it, essentially, for 95% of the $200,000.
That's right. They can buy it for $190,000, which is below its market value.
Even though we just said the borrower the owed $300,000.
That's right. Now, if the borrower wanted it, they would have to pay the full $300,000.
Right. If the borrower wanted to pay it off, pay off the reverse mortgage, right. They'd have to pay the $300,000. But if they pass away, leave it to their son or daughter, and the son or daughter says, I'd like to keep it, they don't have to pay $300,000, even though that's how much their mother or father owed. They would pay 95% of $200,000 or $190,000.
That's right. And in states which are not trustee states, in most cases, non-recourse is extremely valuable. Non-recourse.
Right, because if it's a judicial foreclosure state where you go to court in order to foreclose, then they can try to get the whole $300,000.
That's right. They try and get what's referred to. They try and get a judgment.
Right.
That says they can collect the money at any time.
And they could go after the whole $300,000.
They can go after the full, or to the extent if there was a foreclosures, for example, then they would only have the right to go after $100,000 because the home is worth $200,000. The debt was $300,000. But with foreclosure costs, guess what? Usually that debt is going to rise even more. So maybe it's $350,000 versus a $200,000 value home. That yeah. means they would have the right to go after that deficiency judgment would be $150,000 that the lender could go after, even though they took possession of the home.
Yeah.
Lenders do that? That's the question that you have to look at. Most lenders might be willing to take something less, but you have to talk to the lender.
Yeah, you don't know. You just don't know how they're going to handle that.
Yeah, we call it in the industry, if you're able to sell it for less than the amount of the loan due. We call that a short sale. So if I said to you, look, it's not worth it to us to try and go through this whole foreclosure amount. So here's the deal. If you can sell it for 95% of its current value, we'll just wipe our hands and say, we're not coming after you.
Yeah, good enough. We're done here.
Exactly.
But with the Heckam, you wouldn't have any of that uncertainty. You could leave the home to the kids. The kids could decide they want to keep it, and they'd just say 95% of current market value, $200,000, $190,000, and they could refinance that amount and keep the home.
That's exactly right.
Is there any other mortgage in the entire country that would allow that? I'm saying if my father had a reverse mortgage, he owes $300,000. The house is only worth $200,000. He leaves it to me. I want to keep it. I can refinance $190,000 and buy it. Is there any other mortgage that would allow that to happen?
Yeah, there is. It's not automatic in other states the way it is with when you have a Heckam. That Heckam by law must be non-recourse. And in the loan documents, it says precisely that if in fact there's a foreclosure, the lender will have no right to deficiency judgment.
If there's a foreclosure, but I'm saying if there's not a foreclosure, somebody passes away, leaves the home to their child can buy it for 95% of the current market value. Is there any other mortgage that lets you do that?
Again, in what they refer to as non-recourse states, that's true. But in other states, it is not true, like North Carolina. Are you guys a trusted state?
I don't know. Okay. I've only been here a short time. I don't know.
Most people don't, unless you live like in a place in Arizona or California or Washington. There's just all these Minnesota now, all these different states that have trust deeds. But if you live in a state where there isn't a trust deed, then you're at the mercy of the lender. However, with a reverse mortgage, it's automatically non-recourse and does exactly what it is that Martin's saying.
So what other type of mortgage let the heirs buy it for 95% of current market value?
I'm not aware of any.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. I don't think there is. If you owe $300,000 to Bank of America, okay, if you owe that on your mortgage and you die, they're going to try to collect $300,000.
They are.
They're not going to go to your heirs and say, you can give us 95% of current market value. They're going to try to collect $300,000.
Exactly.
And with the Heckam, that's not the case. So that's a big deal. That's something that you get with the Heckam you don't get with any other mortgage.
You don't.
What's the resistance besides, is there any other resistance that CPAs have? You talk to accountants a lot. Once they understand it, do you see the light bulb go on?
Martin, the basic problem is that they don't have the vision that a lot of us who deal with this all the time have. So they look at this as a product that basically should be helping those who don't have enough cash. They don't have the vision to see that, yeah, this could be used to fund that IRA rollover. You could take the proceeds from the reverse mortgage and pay off the tax bill if that's what you wanted to do.
Right.
Or let's say that if this is a big deal that's going on right now, it's probably beyond the topic that you want to cover, but there's something that's called ILIT. What an ILIT is, it's an irrevocable life insurance trust. And it's based on something, don't laugh, it's based on something, on a court decision, and the name of the party was Crummy. So it's based on Crummy powers.
Okay.
And the idea is, if you give something to an heir, and it's based on something that will have a value in the future greater than what it is now, not only will that be a gift tax item, but it also will become an estate tax item later on. The ILIT says, okay, if I follow the Crummy rule, I won't explain it to you. It's not that hard, but it's not worth the time. 30 days later, the trustee is allowed to buy life insurance. And now the trust owns that life insurance rather than the individual who's the seller. And the idea is that it's not treated as a gift. It's not treated as an estate tax item of the individual who gave it. So what happens is that now a big deal that's coming up, and ILITs are beginning to get more popular again because of what looks like is on the table. If there's no step up in basis upon the death of a decedent, then what's going to be happening is that the heirs are going to get that property at exactly the same tax basis. Mm. That's the basis you use for gain or loss as the individual who died. So let's say your parents got IBM stock.
Yeah.
100,000 shares. And they got it as employees. So they got it for next to nothing. For, let's say it was like 200,000. Those same shares could be worth a lot more because of stock splits and sure. other transactions that go on. That stock could be now worth a handsome sum. But basically, under the proposed law, it would only have a basis in the hands of the heirs at 200,000. So that new value that's out there, we used to get a step up, which means that the heirs got the same basis as what the market was. So in other words, that increase was tax-free. Hmm. And what's being proposed right now is that they want to take away that free step up and only allow the heirs to get the basis that the decedent had. That means that there's going to have to be money coming from somewhere to pay the tax on this.
Right.
And basically the parents want to minimize that to their kids. What they're doing to do that is they're getting islets, which basically says they're paying a lower sum. And then when they pass away, that life insurance will immediately be available to the heirs through this islet, and they can pay their taxes or whatever they have else they have to pay. And it will not be included in their state upon death. But if they bought that life insurance personally and held on to it and then died, the proceeds from that life insurance would be included in their estate, and they'd lose another 40% of it.
Wow. Wow.
So the goal here is that what you want to do is you want to avoid the estate tax, if at all possible. And ILIT is a current way to do that and still be able to get the full benefit of the life insurance out without the added burden of having to pay estate taxes on that life insurance.
Gotcha.
So this is very helpful for more well-to-do people. And what they can do is you can use the proceeds of a HECM or of a reverse mortgage to buy that life insurance.
I see.
So you don't have to sell your portfolio. You don't have to take all your money out of your IRAs or out of your pension in order to fund that ILIT.
And it's tax-free because you took it from the HECM.
Exactly, exactly. The only thing you're going to have to pay is you're going to have to pay gift taxes on that. But if they're taking out $400,000,
yeah,
and that life insurance is going to be worth $1.6 million on your death,
yeah,
that means $1.2 million is not going to have to pass through the estate tax system.
Infinitely better.
In fact, one of my friends who's in the industry says this all the time. Right now, every single taxpayer is a citizen, has an $11.7 million credit. And so if you go ahead and do that ILIT for the $400,000, even though there's a gift tax liability, that credit will reduce it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's much lower. It's better.
It's much better. But the idea is you're getting rid of it before someone comes along. And there is actually legislation in Congress right now that it says it wants to drop that 11.7 down to 3.5. And they want to drop the 11.7 for gifts down to 1 million, which basically means people are going to be paying a lot in the way of gift taxes and estate taxes, far more than they are now if that bill is passed. And it's separate from what's referred to as the Biden tax plan. This is actually Bernie Sanders, and he calls it for the other 99%.
Oh, boy. All right. Look, Jim, thanks so much for taking the time and doing this today. And I know it's complicated. If you're listening to this, you're thinking, oh, my God, that just sounds complicated. And the reality is it is a little complicated. As you get older and as you're retiring, the HECM is a tool that can help you better plan your tax situation. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. And again, I just add this. Make sure you find a tax advisor who not only understands interest deduction rules and all the other rules related to a reverse mortgage, but also understands the basic workings of a HECM.
Yeah, Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I am going to make the commitment. I'm going to work with Jim. I'm going to get some articles written. I'll post them on mandelmanmatters.com and you can look for them there. And we'll try to put some guidelines and some detail to this so that you can print it out and maybe even take it to your CPA or something like that and say, here, I saw this. What about this?
Exactly. And I'm very open to answering questions if somebody wants to call and say, what in the world are you writing? It's not a big deal.
All right.
This is how we live.
I will put a link for Jim on there and you'll be able to reach him and we will try to publish some guidelines that you can print out and take. The point is, if you're over 62 and you're a homeowner and you're trying to plan, there are a lot of different reasons that you can use a HECM. Some people use them because they need the cash flow. Some people should use them because they need the tax advantages.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on today. I think it's an important topic. I think it's almost never discussed. You just never hear anybody talk about it. And that's why I wanted to do it today.
Thank you, Martin.
Thanks very much. We'll talk soon.
Bye.
This episode is complete. Stay tuned for more updates on all the political, social, and economic and legal aspects of the financial crisis. Complicated subjects made easy to understand at mandelmanmatters.com.